Since it's May 28th, that must mean, yep, it's Friday! Friday! Long weekend for a lot of people, including yours truly. At least I think so. I'm not going to go to work on Monday, May 31st, which is Memorial Day, here in the United States, where, you know what, doesn't really matter why it's a holiday, just it's a holiday. It's a military holiday. Alright, so, let's go ahead and jump into the fun. First, before I do, and since this is On and On Radio and OnRadio.net, we use COM, and On Radio is powered by SDF, so all you gotta do is SSH over at SDF.org. You can use, once you have an account, you can use TTY.SDF.org, and you'll get sent off to one of the cluster accounts. It's pretty cool. Or, just SSH over. You can sign up for an account as SSHing as new at SDF.org, and life is good. Let's go here. Just go ahead and connect myself, and then press G for go to, and then Anon Radio, all lowercase. You'll end up, bam, in the Anon Radio room, where you can say hi to cool people like Northern Lights and Harry Larry and everybody else. So hello, hello, Ratsu and all the other news hounds. Thank you for tuning in. Let's go ahead and start the way we always start. World news. That's right. I finally escaped meeting hell. And Stug is here. Oh, yeah. W. Visser, Ratsu, the crew. Oh, yeah. We got a whole bunch of people in comm right now. You can join in. Well, like I said, let's get going. All right. First up. Mexico's doctors protest as vaccines denied to frontline health workers. Doctors' pleas receive little sympathy from government as critics say President AMLO favors teachers for political reasons. Ana Sofia is a radiologist at a state-run hospital in the Mexican city of Monterrey, not far from the Texas border. Her work often brings her into close contact with patients, but says she was denied a coronavirus vaccination as her superiors did not consider her to be a frontline worker. In despair, she attended a rural vaccination event for the elderly and asked for a leftover dose of the Sinovac jab, but she was again rebuffed, this time by political operatives who told her to wait her turn. "It was the worst thing that I've had to do in my life, beg for a universal right," she said. They had orders to just vaccinate seniors, and they threw away the extra doses. Mexico has administered roughly 27.7 million doses, about 10.9% of the population, and President Andrés Manuel López Obrador has expressed hopes all adults will have at least one dose by October. But vaccines have still been denied to many doctors, dentists, and medical workers in private medicine. Further fueling their discontent was a decision to vaccinate teachers from both private and public schools ahead of private sector physicians. The decision extended to bureaucrats in the Public Education Secretariat and support staff at universities. Even reporters and editors at media outlets run by public schools boasted of being vaccinated. So, pretty wild, right? What's going on here? In the end, Ana Sofia made the... Some of her colleagues have resolved the problem by flying to the United States, but Cordero argues that her own country should be protecting its healthcare workers. "It's my right that the president gets me a vaccination," Cordero said. "I shouldn't have to go to another country where they have vaccines." In the end, Ana Sofia made the opposite decision and traveled across the border to get Johnson & Johnson shot at a supermarket in the Texas town of Eagle Pass. At least 20 of her colleagues have made the same trip. "I never had high expectations about being vaccinated in Mexico because I've had to buy all my own personal protective equipment from day one," she said. "Spent thousands of pesos on masks, face shields, tests, and now the trip to the United States for vaccinations." So, pretty wild there. What is happening? Oh, man. All right, let's keep on rolling. So, that's going on in Mexico, a little further away, in Iraq. I thought this was a kind of a cool thing. It involves tuk-tuks. And what's a tuk-tuk? They are really cool. There is a, what is his name? His name is Basha. There is an Indian Bollywood movie that I really like called Basha. It's Bravo Alpha Alpha Sierra Hotel Hotel Alpha. Basha. And I freaking love it. It's a Tamil language action film. Written and directed by Suresh Krishna, and it stars Rajinkanth. Rajinkanth is a great Bollywood action star. Everything he's in is amazing. I love all those movies. But anyway, the reason why am I bringing up Vasha? Well, because in Vasha, he's a tuk-tuk driver, and so seeing these, I had to bring it up. So what's going on here? Well, Iraq's tuk-tuk taxis have long been a symbol of the anti-government demonstrations gripping the country since October 25th, 2019. The tuk-tuks regularly enter protest sites to evacuate injured people, but the Iraqi government is cracking down on the involvement. Banned from driving in certain cities and targeted by random police checks, tuk-tuk drivers say they're being unfairly targeted by the authorities. Iraq's tuk-tuk drivers came into the limelight in October 2019 when they joined anti-government demonstrators in major cities around the country. These drivers use their vehicles to evacuate. Why are they repeating the same thing, basically? Anywho, the authorities have clamped down on their presence over the past few months, banning them from attending demonstrations. During a protest on May 25th in Baghdad, two protesters were shot and killed, and dozens more injured. Ali, not his real name, 25 years old, is a tuk-tuk driver. He wasn't able to get to the square to help the injured. He spoke to us about his frustration at the time. No tuk-tuk was able to get to Tahrir Square. Every access to it was blocked by security forces. It's really frustrating. Lots of drivers think the government has taken these measures as revenge for us supporting the October Revolution. Editor's note, the anti-government demonstrations across Iraq that began in... Oh, he's just quoting what we just said. Then there's some videos of different tuk-tuk drivers doing cool things. Rescue missions. But, yeah, so now... It's pretty sad. Huh, they had a concussion. Oh, I must have missed something in comm. Anyway, we'll keep on going. I definitely... If you haven't seen it and you like old action Indian movies, Basha, it is so fun. I love it. If I've told you once, it's like I've said it 1,000 times. And Basha. Anyway, it's great. There's a lot of music and dancing. There's some fun. Okay. Oh, they had a concussion because they were repeating themselves. One of my friends was jumped or attacked last night downtown. He doesn't know how or what happened because he got hit in the head. But, yeah. So everyone was worried he had a concussion, but somebody went and checked on him and he was okay. Or at least he's not in a problem. Yeah, I hope he's okay. He has a confrontational attitude. And he's a shorter, skinny guy, and so he's real fit. But he often has found himself on the receiving end of fights. So I hope he's okay. He seemed like he was all right. He seems like he's okay. Anyway, sorry. Personal life and news are blending strongly together today. Sorry about that. Lots of drama all over the place. All right. Well, thanks, Northern Lights. Appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. So, we're not here to talk about Marcus time. We're here...
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
And a song. So, let's get through this. Some Iranian news. This is a sad, sad state of affairs. Heidi Kikorazravi. I practiced saying this name earlier. I still am messing up. Hadi Kikorsravi is one of about 1,000 people in Iran stricken with epidemiolysis bullosa, or EB, a rare and deadly genetic disease that causes blisters, sores, and wounds to form on the skin. It's such a painful condition, those with EB often compare their skin to third-degree burns. It feels like boiling water, drop by drop, falling on your skin. You can feel this pain no matter what the time of day. You can see how you're losing your skin. Kikorsravi, 29, told Al Jazeera from his home in Sabzavar, northeastern Iran. But thanks to imports of special bandages from a Swedish medical company, Molnilik, his pain was relieved for a few years and his condition was easier to manage. The product, called Mepilex, absorbent foam dressing, could easily absorb fluid from the wound, allowing it to heal faster and making life more bearable. I could easily do my daily work. I could change my clothes without the sores getting stuck to my clothes. But after the United States, under Donald Trump, withdrew from Iran's 2015 nuclear deal with world powers in May 2018 and reimposed unilateral sanctions, Malnilik stopped exporting the Mepilix product to Iran, and his temporary relief was brought to an end. So, it's a really terrible condition there. The alternative in Iran is to use regular dressings with petroleum jelly, along with medication to control the sores and prevent infection, but is not as effective. Oh, wow. And then they show somebody's hand with this condition. It's on the hand of a baby, which makes it even sadder. Without Mepilex, Kikosravi found himself unable to control a wound on his leg that continued to grow. The infection eventually spread to his bloodstream, and on June 16, 2020, his leg had to be amputated from the knee down to prevent this infection from spreading further. According to the Hague-based Iranian Center for International Criminal Law, nearly 30 Iranian EB patients, mostly children, have died since Malnilik stopped selling its dressings to Iran. For EB survivors, the pain is increased by 70%. So, just a little piece of news. There's a lot more detail over on Al Jazeera if you actually want to read more about it. But, yeah, that's happening in Iran. Just a direct result of U.S. unilateral action in the world. Because we're such good guys. Let's see. In further imperialist news, the EU pledges 3 billion euros in funding for Belarus if it transitions to democracy. The EU has said it will provide Belarus with 3 billion euros through grants and loans if the country changes course in an attempt to ramp up internal pressure on President Alexander Lukashenko as he met with Vladimir Putin in Moscow. Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, came close to an all-out call for regime change as she issued the pledge of funds in return for a transition to democracy. Our messages are twofold. To the people of Belarus, we see and hear your desire for change, for democracy, and for a bright future, she said. And to the Belarusian authorities, no amount of repression, brutality, or coercion will bring any legitimacy to your authoritarian regime. So far, you've blatantly ignored the democratic choice of the Belarusian people. It's time to change course. When, and we believe it is a case of when, not if, Belarus starts its peaceful democratic transition, the EU will be there to accompany it. The offer was made shortly before Lukashenko had arrived in the Black Sea resort of Sochi on Friday for a summit with the Russian president, whose government has sought to distance itself from Sunday's arrest of opposition journalist Roman Pratasevich and his girlfriend Sofia Sapega. Pratasevich and Sapega were taken into custody in Minsk after the Ryanair flight got diverted to land there. So, we'll see what happens. The West is pretty good at regime change. The United States and just the West in general is pretty good at like just going into foreign countries and then just taking it over and installing leaders. But they usually don't last that long. So I don't know. We'll see what happens. A $3 billion in just money might make a little bit faster. Yeah. I guess you're right. Northern Lights, you're right. Lots of Belarusians have wanted regime change for a while. I'm just pointing out that it seems like, how could we put this? External pressure on a country is always concerning to me because I feel like it gets a little rough. But yeah, I'm not a Lukashenko fan either. Anyway, all right. Let's stop rambling. Let's keep
get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get to it. We've got to go through. We've got two quick stories, and then we'll play a song. We got to do both of these, or else it's going to feel lopsided to me in my head. So here's your warning.
Ouch!
We're going to talk about a couple of stories out of Israel. Terrorizing a generation, Israel arresting Palestinian children, 13-year-old Mohammed Saadi was kidnapped, blindfolded, beaten, and threatened with a gun to his head by five men in his hometown of al-Fahim. It was May 20th, and Saadi was among thousands who gathered for a funeral procession held by Mohammed Kiwan, a 17-year-old who was shot by Israeli police a week earlier. At the time, tensions escalated in occupied East Jerusalem. So, except that they were armed and they covered their faces with masks and scarves and were dressed like any Palestinian in Israel participating in a sit-in. Except they were armed and belonged to part of the Israeli police Mustaribin unit, an undercover unit made up of Israelis disguised as Palestinians. Its agents usually attend Palestinian protests with the intention of arresting demonstrators. So they showed up to a funeral and caused some trouble. There's a lot of detail in this article, but it's just tough. The other story, which is why I want to kind of mention both of them, is then there's also another article on why is the Palestinian Authority arresting West Bank activists? And this comes to us, these are both available on Al Jazeera. Tarki al-Kudahiri is back home with his family in the occupied West Bank city of Ramallah, but the 22-year-old activist, whose face and presence is well known in the city's demonstrations, is still bewildered by his arrest at the hand of the Palestinian security forces last week. The preventative security forces called my father's mobile phone last Saturday and informed him that he and I need to both be present for a friendly, in quotes, 10-minute chat at their headquarters. They promised that my father and I would go home together. The officers then showed a video of a protest claiming that al-Kudahiri had chanted insults against late Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat, which he categorically denied. "Everyone knows I have a good relationship with the members and activists of the various political parties," he said. "These protests were in support of the resistance and in solidarity with our people in Gaza during Israel's offensive. It doesn't make sense to use these protests to insult political leaders." Security forces changed tack and informed al-Kudahiri his life was under threat by unknown individuals who were affronted by the alleged offense and were out to get him. "Security forces told me to spend 24 hours at their headquarters as a way of protection." That night, the young activist was violently interrogated for many hours and treated with such visceral anger and depravity that it shocked him. "They threatened to hang me by my hands and assaulted me physically and verbally. They handcuffed me with my hands behind my back and blindfolded me and made me sit for long hours on a low chair with no back." For the first 24 hours of his detainment, al-Kudahiri's family had no idea about his whereabouts. He was eventually taken to a solitary cell. As his blood sugar levels plunged dangerously low, his pleas for a diabetes kit fell on deaf ears until he had a hypoglycemic attack. His detention was extended another 24 hours, and he was banned from seeing a lawyer. So, this is wild stuff kind of going on. But yeah. Whew. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't have enough spoons, I guess is what they'd say, to really cover the Israeli-Gaza-Palestine stuff much anymore. Hey, welcome, ML Smith, or MLS. Yeah, ML Smith sounds about right. Thanks for joining in. And I'm excited that W. Visser, you're going to watch Basha. It's such a fun movie. I enjoy it a lot. I look forward to hearing what you think. And Tobe is in the house. All right, the chairman. Before we do this song, I want to mention the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe is coming up in just 10 minutes. So check that out. Stick around for that. But first, you know what's coming.
Get the news over with. I want to hear the music.
Okay. Well, sure. You know what?
Resistance is futile.
Hey, Matt.
Yeah, Tim?
Hey, you talked to Mark lately?
I haven't really talked to him, but he looks pretty down.
He looks pretty down. Yeah, well, maybe we should cheer him up then.
What do you...
Northern Lights knows this song.
Well, does he like butter tarts?
I was lying on the grass of Sunday morning of last week.
Look so bad before.
I did once before, but this is pretty bad.
Yeah, what do you think she got up to last night?
Jared! I love you!
I was flying on the bench, sliding in the park across the street. L-A-T-E-R, that week. My sticky buns were in the making, so I was at a big, that's the big tree.
SDF Public Access Unix System.
Yes, indeed. My apologies to Lynn. Sorry to cut you off a little early, but we've got a few more stories to do, and, you know, that's just kind of how it happens. So, we just got to cut you for time. That's what goes on here. We've got just about 7 minutes and some change before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe. Like I mentioned at the top of the hour, I just always say it after we play the song, we play the Anon Radio sound, and...
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
That's right, and coming up next after this Dubious thing, it just happens, it just spills out of my head. Alright, let's go through... Yeah, we covered that a few times. Yep, let's jump through it. Okay, so here we go. Like to hear it? Here we go.
You've got mail.
Hong Kong tycoon Jimmy Lai is sentenced to more jail time over the protests in 2019. Hong Kong media tycoon and outspoken pro-democracy activist Jimmy Lai was sentenced to more jail time Friday over his role in an anti-government protest in 2019 as authorities step up a crackdown. Lai and nine others were charged with incitement to take part in an unauthorized assembly when they walked down a road with thousands of residents on October 1, 2019, to protest against dwindling political freedoms in Hong Kong. Lai, 73, was sentenced to 14 months in prison. He's currently serving a separate 14-month jail term for other convictions earlier this year, also related to unauthorized rallies in 2019. So, with the two sentences combined, Lai will serve a total of 20 months behind bars. He's the founder of the Apple Daily, a feisty pro-democracy tabloid. Lai is also being investigated under the city's sweeping national security law, imposed last year for colluding with foreign powers to intervene in the Hong Kong affairs. Over the past year, Beijing's clampdown on civil liberties in response to protests, Hong Kong authorities have been arrested and charged most of the city's pro-democracy advocates, including Joshua Wong, a student leader during the 2014 protests. Scores of others have fled abroad. So, that's going on in China. Just a little update for him. And if we look into Canada, this is kind of a sad, want. I wish I had a kind of sad, you lost. But...
Excuse me while I whip this out.
William Amos apologizes after urinating during a video call. Canadian politicians apologized after urinating during virtual video parliamentary proceedings. It was the second such mishap involving William Amos, who represents Pontiac in Quebec. Last month, he appeared naked on a video call with colleagues. "I'm deeply embarrassed by my actions and the distress they may have caused anybody who witnessed them," Mr. Amos said on Thursday. He describes the latest incident as unacceptable but accidental. William Amos. I got excited, I guess. William Amos, with an M, not anus, sorry. Oh, I guess they do sound alike. Man, I gotta work on my enunciation. In his statement, the politician, who's a member of Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party, said he would temporarily step aside from some duties while he continued to represent his constituency. He added he would seek assistance without elaborating on what this would involve or what he would seek help for. "I am deeply appreciative for the support of my staff and the love of my family." Mr. Amos is a former environmental lawyer and has been a member of Parliament since 2015. In April, he appeared naked on another video session with colleagues and said he accidentally turned on his video while changing into workout clothes, exchanging into work clothes after going for a jog. At the time, Mr. Amos said he was embarrassed by the incident, but said the honest mistake would not happen again. So, pretty rough times for him indeed. he's slowly learning how to use Zoom, but in a very public way. Hey, welcome, Zeptar. Oh, wait. Oh, there. Yeah, perfect. So, yeah, he left his mic on while he was peeing in a meeting, and so everybody could hear it. And so he's slowly learning how to use Zoom. He learned how to turn his video off, but he didn't learn how to turn his microphone off yet. Alright, so let's run through. We've got some Africa news. I always try and get some of that in before it's too late, before the show ends. Germany has recognized colonial genocide in Namibia and commits 1 billion euros in reparations. Germany, for the first time on Friday, recognized it had committed genocide in Namibia during its colonial occupation with Berlin, promising financial support worth more than 1 billion euros to aid projects in the African nation. German colonial settlers killed tens of thousands of indigenous Herero and Nama people in 1904 to 1908, massacres labeled the first genocide of the 20th century by historians, poisoning relations between Namibia and Germany for years. While Berlin had previously acknowledged that atrocities occurred at the hands of its colonial authorities, they have repeatedly refused to pay direct reparations. "We will now officially refer to these events as what they are from today's perspective, genocide," said Foreign Minister Heiko Maas in a statement. He hailed the agreement after more than 5 years of negotiations with Namibia over events in the territory held by Berlin from 1884 to 1915. So, this will be good. I think this is a positive move. It's kind of, just yesterday we talked about France recognizing its role in, at least its mistakes, its complacency in genocide in Africa before. Feel-good story. For years, the central Nigerian city of Jos, J-O-S, was a flashpoint for ethnic strife, pitting Christian and Muslim youths against each other in clashes in rival neighborhoods. Neighbor turned against neighbor as Muslims dared not cross into Christian districts and Christians steered clear of Muslim-dominated quarters. But community leaders have turned to football, and music as a way to reach across the divide in a program successfully building trust and restoring the peace. Promoting mediation and team spirit, Salis Muhammad Abdul Salam and his community group went from neighborhood to neighborhood recruiting young football players from 20 communities, branding them with names like Love FC and Unity FC. The initiative has helped to bring divided Jos, capital city of the Central Plateau State, back together. So I thought that was really cool. Hey, welcome, hobo. Thank you for tuning in. We've got just under a minute, so here's just the headlines. Mali's junta leader, Colonel Assimi Goïta, declares himself president, which is not a big surprise. Germany recognizes Namibia. Nigeria has started search and rescue missions for the 120 people that were lost in that boat that split apart. Protesters in Johannesburg are demanding prostitution to become legalized. And, this was great. In Sandwell, a Bitcoin mine was found. They thought they were going to find a drug operation, and officers had been tipped off about this site on the Great Bridge Industrial Estate, and they raided it. And instead of cannabis plants, they found a bank of 100 computer units. They said they were mining cryptocurrencies. So, pretty neat. All right, well, thanks so much. It's been a great week. Today was a little wild, but hey, it's not too bad.
Well, that sounds
stick around for Tope. See you Monday.
Come to an end. Thanks for listening. I'll be back tomorrow. And every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee would...